Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Gabby Reece Show. Elijah Allen Blitz,
yo.
We are here with our, I guess these are our official bonus episodes.
Okay.
I just feel like they're episodes on their own.
Yeah.
And for people who haven't listened, this is basically our kitchen talk brought to a little more of an official format, talking always somewhere in here. We'll talk about technology.
Yeah.
Because you are my my bridge and tether to not only what's happening, since it's changing so quickly, because I can't keep up. I can barely keep up with things I'm trying to read and listen to.
For sure.
And you're always like, oh, this week, you can't believe. And I just always really appreciate it, because my tendency sometimes is to poo-poo or not go against, resist technology. And you're like, not only is that a huge mistake, because you will get left in the dust, but it's a tool.
It's a tool.
Your favorite word.
Yes. Yeah.
That I
feel like you're a tether. You're a good tether in this respect, because it's like, oh, yeah, they can this and this and this. You're like, yeah, and how do we actually use it?
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think because I mean, I'm older than you by quite a bit. And also, I think when you have... you know, there's certain rituals that I've practiced so thousands of times, whether it's cleaning dishes, folding laundry, dealt with a child that was, you know, was sick, not sleeping. I think these rituals, which are quiet and unsexy, they do ground you in an interesting way. That, and of course, training.
And you live with Laird.
Yeah, there's always that. Laird, who will take it to the step further and dig a hole you know, do all these things. So I think that sometimes that's why we, you know, we always encourage people when we talk about even taking care of yourself to get out in nature, because that orientation to then pursue all these things, which I think you do very well. I think that is so important versus living in, you know, a building with windows or just your own little bubble, but using nature, who really should be our ultimate guide, to ground us and then say, okay, from this place, how do I, you know, look at these things?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. And I do appreciate that about you. So let's dive right in.
Let's do it.
So NVIDIA.
NVIDIA.
You were really excited about that. So what's going on there?
It's just, it's crazy. I mean, do you know what NVIDIA is?
I do, but for people listening.
So they create chips. And computer chips. And they were basically way ahead of creating the first computers that were powerful enough to process artificial intelligence machines. So they were just at least a decade ahead of everybody else. And
who, can I ask a dumb question?
Okay.
Like, who owns them for real?
Well, the CEO is a guy named Jensen Huang. And he really seems to be the guy. Like, he has relationships with Taiwan. I think he's maybe from there. I have friends that work there. And as far as I know, like, Jensen runs the show. Like, there's a video of him delivering the first supercomputer to OpenAI and Elon Musk in, like, 2017.
Okay.
So
it's not really owned by Google or Microsoft?
No, definitely not. No, they just surpassed Google in terms of market cap. They're now the third most valuable company in the world.
Where do they manufacture?
Do you know? The 90-something percent of the chips are in Taiwan.
Right.
Yeah, but I think they're trying to figure out, you know, what happens, and I'm sure they have other places too. It's not just like dependent on Taiwan.
So tell me what's going on.
Well, their market cap has just exploded. They're now the third most valuable, $2 trillion. They're the third most valuable company in the world behind Microsoft and Apple. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, if this is the gold rush with AI, like, they're selling the picks and the shovels. And it's, I don't know the exact number, but their market cap in a day jumped the equivalent of one Netflix.
Seriously.
In a day.
Why?
Because their their projections for how much they were going to earn that quarter was actually exceeded by a ridiculous amount. And like overnight, like their market cap the next morning was more, like it had grown larger than Netflix's entire company.
Yeah, but that's... You know, listen, when you talk about entertainment, even versus the gaming industry, it's minuscule.
But Netflix was considered a tech stock.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, for a while, they were like part of the Big Seven.
Now, because we're moving away from, oh, wow, cool, I can stream it live, to this you know, to AI. Yeah. I think it goes back down. It's the new entertainment company.
What is?
Netflix.
Versus,
old fashioned would have been either the networks, NBC or Paramount or Universal. And so Netflix just brought that and updated what those companies are. And now we're going to have technology companies, which actually has nothing to do with Netflix. Do you know what I'm saying?
Or even that are powering Netflix. Netflix has to use NVIDIA chips, I'm sure, for some capacity.
So they could be a technology company for about 12 years. And then it's like, cute. You're really like a entertainment network.
We'll see. I mean, they're pivoting fast.
What are they going to do?
I don't know.
Pivot how?
The thing with Netflix is like when they talk about streaming wars, Disney and Paramount.
Yeah, they're crushing everybody, right?
The war is over. Netflix won the war. It's not even a war.
Yeah.
In terms of that. So,
That's the beauty of starting out new and nimble
and
not having to keep up.
Yeah. There is I've heard this, Sam Altman was talking about, there's a group chat of Silicon Valley CEOs and they all have a betting pool of when the first $1 billion company started by one person is going to happen. And it's not a matter of if it's going to happen. They're all just betting on what year and how soon it's going to happen. A $1 billion company just founded by one person.
One person alone?
One person alone. Yeah.
What's that look like?
We're going to find out. I mean, obviously, if they knew the answer, they would have done it themselves. So I don't think anybody knows what that is exactly. But it's just that's where we're at.
But it's a $1 billion company and you don't have to give a job to anybody? Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
We'll see. I mean, I'm not taking a stance of like, oh, that's a great thing or bad thing. This is where we're at. Like, that's a trip.
So maybe everyone will be billionaires walking around with their one-man band.
It's possible. I don't know what that looks like.
But what do we make and sell? Or we just have one more thing to occupy our time with?
Yeah, I mean, that is a great question because I was actually talking with Laird about NVIDIA and how like this crazy thing.
Did he even flinch? Was he like...
Well, he was just like, well, how come the people that don't make the essential stuff like food and water, like where are they at in this equation? And it's like, yeah, good point, you know? Yes, you can use these chips for tractors and things and like they will help, but that's minuscule compared to the majority of the business.
Right.
So.
I know. I want to know who owns water.
I think we all do.
That person. Those people.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're so funny. We think we're so smart. And I know we are, but we're not also.
We were talking about this last week. Remember, you're like, so are we going to get smarter? Yeah. Are we going to get dumber? Yeah.
certain systems are so beautiful.
Yeah.
And we just like to see like, what if I get my hands in there? It's like, oh my gosh. Okay, so NVIDIA, let's wrap up what we think that means or why that's so significant. Just that something that already valuable could become so much more valuable so quickly.
Yeah, well, also this company that you probably never heard of a few years ago.
Lucky.
What?
Lucky him. Mr. Wong is probably still...
I've known guys that work at NVIDIA for years and they are smart. This has been a very calculated...
No, meaning like model. There's something cool about like you crush it and you're really successful, but you don't always have to be in the bullseye.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Cause Apple and Microsoft, those guys are constantly...
Totally. It's like I said, they're making the picks and shovels for the gold rush.
I know.
It's like nobody's judging them. It's just like, oh yeah, they're just making compute power, but it's like they're now more... Like their market cap is bigger than Canada's GDP.
Yeah, well, Canada's had some bad weird years. Let's face it.
That's for sure. But still, that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's crazy. This company that you hadn't heard of a few years ago is now larger than Canada's entire GDP. It's just worth paying attention to.
Why is there not another company that's doing
chips
the way they're doing it?
There are. I mean, there's a company, AMD, that's trying. You know, all these other companies now are trying to make chips. Like Google's making chips. They're all trying to make chips. But I think NVIDIA is just so far ahead. We'll see what happens. But they're so far ahead. And we'll see. It's an interesting time.
I do think it is interesting how our markets got so off kilter when you could create so much value in a company that ultimately, in some ways, doesn't... It's making something, but it's more abstract.
With chips?
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could have said that about oil in its own way because it's a tool. But do you know what I mean? Like how technology, nobody ever got this rich this quick in the years gone by.
Yeah.
And
that's just accelerating.
Yeah. And it's just fascinating, that component. And then all it does is it gets everybody coming out of school, or never mind going to school, just wanting to be in that market. Mm-hmm. And I'm always curious about people who want to solve some of the other problems that we have. Because you have a big group that's really incentivized to go solve those problems because you make a, there's a big payoff.
Yeah. You know, Peter Diamandis says this thing that's pretty cool. He's like, if you want to be a billionaire, help a billion people. Like, figure out a way to help a billion people. Like, yeah. don't let the money be the focus. Just focus on trying to help a billion people. See what happens.
Yeah. I think... If it, especially if it becomes common where like one person alone can make a $1 billion company, maybe we'll start to reassess. There's always going to be somebody who wants money and power. I'm not that naive, but we'll start to, on a larger scale, maybe reassess what we think is so important.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. And that what scarcity means, yeah. If we can really actually feed, clothe, shelter, mm-hmm. everybody, take care of everybody.
That'd be,
what does that mean?
I'd feel pretty rich.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's start going that direction.
I know.
Yeah.
I always love your optimism.
I try and be.
I'm like, they want to enslave us and control us.
I mean, I think that's there too. I'm trying to be realistic and it's like it as informed as I can. And then realizing that, like, actually, my realistic perspective is pretty optimistic.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, overall, it's like if it's 80-20, that's still 20% that everything gets completely destroyed. So it's not a small 20%.
Yeah. Because that's the thing that goes back to, remember, we've talked about this where. Why do people flip out? There's 1,000 great comments, 1 bad comment, yep. because it takes 1,000 right steps to build anything. And it only takes 1 wrong step to blow something up. And so we're hardwired to be ultra sensitive to the 1.
Yeah, for sure.
That's 1 wrong turn.
The amygdala, the 1 tiger in the bush.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's it. That's all it takes.
Yeah, it's far out.
Yeah.
Okay. We talked about Elon. There's something significant about him suing OpenAI.
Yes. So this has just happened within a couple of days of when we're recording this. Elon is filing a lawsuit against OpenAI because, you know, we've talked about this. Mm-hmm. He founded it and put in the initial money and even came up with the name OpenAI and, you know, the whole thing. And he was afraid Google was going to, like, take it over. And so it's open source. And all of a sudden, now he takes his foot, you know, he goes, starts to focus on his other companies and comes back. And now all of a sudden they're like 49% owned by Microsoft. And it's like exactly what he didn't want them to do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's so many things interesting about this lawsuit, but the like simple version, I don't know, let's see what happens. But I'll just like, he's trying to get this to go to court. He's not doing this for the money. He's trying to get this to go to court for disclosure so we see what's really happening behind the curtain. And I don't know if you remember when Sam Altman got fired, we did a podcast.
Over the weekend.
Yeah, over the weekend and that whole crazy thing. We talked about this thing called Q-Star, this leak that had come out.
Yes.
Do you remember this a little bit?
Vaguely.
And it was because the day before Sam was fired, this is in November, he came out and said, I've just seen something at the company that pushes the veil of ignorance back and the frontier of humanity forward. Nobody knew what that meant. And then all of a sudden, the next day, he's fired. Mm-hmm. And like the board says he's out and whatever. Then, you know, the whole craziness happens and he's rehired. The board is fired and he's fully in control. Part of their deal, OpenAI's deal with Microsoft, is that Microsoft gets exclusive access to GPT until they create AGI, artificial general intelligence.
Okay.
And as soon as they create AGI, then it's like, that's for the benefit of humanity and it goes forward.
Just for people listening, I know most know. Can you please explain just that slight difference?
AGI? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so artificial general intelligence is basically when the machines are completely capable of doing everything a human can do, if not better.
Right, because right now what people don't realize, even though they're very smart and have access to all the information, the way they learn is very inefficient. ChatGPT, the computer.
Yeah.
It's self-learning, but it uses the whole internet to do it. It actually is slow compared to even how in certain things, the way we learn.
Yeah.
So it's just for people to understand that.
Yeah. And probably the simplest way, and this is an oversimplification, but just for this conversation, it's like, if right now AI is still a tool, ChatGPT, all these things are tools. When you get to AGI, it's quite, that's probably not a tool. Then you're talking about potentially a conscious entity. And conscious is a strange word because we don't understand what our own consciousness is. So it's hard to say that, but that's the simple version of it. Mm-hmm. So like when you get to AGI, it's something that it's like, wait, all bets are off.
But why would the powers that be?
Yeah.
Microsoft, for example.
Yeah.
Why would they say once it's AGI, then we'll open it up to everybody?
Well, they didn't say that. That was just part of the founding document of OpenAI that Elon installed, saying that like your goal is to create AGI for everybody. So it can't just be owned by this one company.
But that's still baked into the rules in play?
That's still baked into like the founding contract of the company.
Yeah, but he wasn't expecting them to own 49% of the company. So True. How are they going to...
They figured out this loophole to like spin it off into a for-profit arm. And it was the whole technical... it's probably a rabbit hole that would take too long to
go into. Okay, so but once they have AGI, they're not going to let us know for a year anyway.
Well, so here's the interesting thing. He's claiming in the lawsuit that they actually already have AGI and they're not telling anybody. Because as soon as they say we have AGI, Microsoft is out. So it behooves them to not...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Hold it down. I pay my monthly for ChatGPT. Yeah. So premium, you know, not just the basic.
I'm telling you, it's worth 20 bucks. Yeah.
My intros have never sounded better. The red ones.
or reading whole books or summarizing YouTube videos or everything.
Oh, it's embarrassing. So here's Elon saying, okay, I'm bringing it to court to try to force the exposure.
I want everybody to see what's going on. That's what it appears to be. And listen, I don't think, like, Elon has his own, like, AI competitors. So it's not to say that Elon's, like, innocent and all this by any means, but it doesn't mean he's wrong. Right. And that's what's going to be interesting to see.
He plays an interesting game, that guy, doesn't he?
Four, 5D. I don't even know how to comprehend it, but... Even with all his craziness and like incentives, whatever's going on, there's something about this that's like, that sounds like it's going to benefit us. And we'll find out to what degree and how.
So I have a very fundamental question when I think about Elon Musk, right? People really don't like him. Why is that? Because okay, you buy X, you let people that other people think shouldn't be on the platform, whatever, Alex Jones and whoever, whatever, other people.
Yeah.
I'm just curious where we got to a place, like, because when I see it, I think you don't have to love what everybody does, but people really have very strong feelings. What is it about him, do you really think, that people react so strongly about? What are they threatened by? Because they must be threatened by something, otherwise they wouldn't react that quick, intensely.
Yeah. I think to understand that, it's like you have to take a step back and be like, who is he pissing off? You know, and it's like he's one of those people that's at the highest echelons of all of these conversations and playing the game at the biggest level. And he seems to have really pissed off. Like when he even came out, like they had that whole EV summit at the White House and all the other automakers except Tesla were invited. And you got Biden up there saying like, oh yeah, you know, Ford or GM is pushing the, you know, EV revolution forward. And like that month they shipped 12 electric vehicles or something. And Elon had shipped like 12,000.
Yeah.
I don't know what the numbers are, but it's something crazy like that. So he's gone out of his way to say like F them and, you know, do his whole thing. So with that, when you piss off people like that, then all of these media organizations that are siding with the government and all those big entities, they have incentive to write so many articles of just like, this guy is crazy. He's a super villain. Who knows if he is? He might be. He can look like a James Bond villain at times, you know? So it's not to say he's not, but even if he is, in some of these things, he might not be wrong, which is a very weird conundrum. Mm. So I don't know him. I've not met him. So I can't make an informed, perspective on that. It's just from what I'm reading and hearing and seeing. But in terms of why he pisses people off, it's like he's also tweeted and done some really crazy shit.
Yeah.
So like, you know, he said some stuff he's apologized for some of it, but like there's some crazy shit he's done.
Yeah. From your own opinion, do you feel like he skews more towards the insane or the genius? And do you feel like there's in a way that his contributions kind of outweigh some of the far out things he says?
I think so. Just from my limited perspective, I do think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of crazy and genius, it's like the Walter Isaacson book is so worth reading. Because it's like he really just says, it's like he goes into this thing that they would call demon mode.
Yeah.
And so like that's a real thing. We're talking about this guy going into a demon mode, you know, so there's that. But overall, it's like, who do we have that's even coming close to this? Like, I'm going to send rockets to Mars and like, I'm going to, you know, make electric vehicles cool. And I'm going to, you know, create tunnels so we don't have to deal with traffic. And like, I think so.
And I know, I often wonder, we all want these great outcomes, But I don't think people really understand who, what type of person it takes to really make things happen and to change. And they're usually, and I'm not putting it, and it's your favorite word, these aren't normally nice people. They could have elements of good character and things like that. But I think it's so funny that we all want these things, but a lot of us don't understand because what you're up against.
Yeah.
Never mind how hard it is to do the actual, to be smart enough, to be raised in the right environment, to have access, to get the resources to actually even be there. That's a miracle in itself. Mm-hmm. But then to be able to endure what it takes to test things, to fail, to be successful, to go against the system, mm-hmm. to have, you know, constant criticism. There's very few people that can, that, well, look at, there's one right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he said on Lex's podcast, he said a few times, he's like, you wouldn't want to be me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's real. And, you know, we were, I don't want to say who said it, but we were at a dinner the other night with somebody that was with him and like was watching him just yell and go off at some engineer that was like, this engineer was building 3D printed houses that were supposed to be on Mars. And like, he's, you know, the guy that was telling the story was like, well, like, this isn't that big a deal. Like, he's just off by a little bit. Like, you know, he's creating houses. He hasn't created full cities yet, but like, why are you being so hard on him? He's like, he said, you don't understand. If he doesn't get this timing right, we only have this like one window where we can get where Mars is in alignment. And if he doesn't do this right, then it will be another 7 years plus that window that we get. Like, so his one thing could set our mission back by another decade. And he's like, oh, I'm just going to step out of this. Like, I don't understand like the level that you're thinking about this at. So that's one example.
This podcast is brought to you by Quince. So let's just start off right off the top. The best part, Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than all the similar luxury brands. Now, my thing is, I don't want to have a ton of stuff. I just want to have a few nice things that will last and won't go out of style. I don't want to buy a bunch of, you know, products that come and go or fast fashion. So I want to buy the good stuff, but it does get expensive. And Quince has managed to find this sweet spot. They work with the highest level materials, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters that cost like $50. They've got organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops. They even have jewelry. Recently, I started with a black pair of linen pants. I can have them for years and years. I can dress them up. I can dress them down. They wash and wear great. I recently also bought some sheets. I talk about sheets a lot. I feel like I'm always buying sheets. They're incredible. They're really, really soft. And you go, well, how do they do it? Well, they work directly with the factory and then just pass that savings on to you. But they only work with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices. And again, all the most premium fabrics and finishes. I really love that. So if you're interested, maybe you want to get something for yourself or present, head to quince.com. That's Q-U-I-N-C-E.com. And if you put in /Gabby, you'll get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. So you can really see it, wear it, you know, understand the quality for yourself. So again, that's quince.com/Gabby, Q-U-I-N-C-E.com/Gabby. You'll get your free shipping and a 365-day return at quince.com/Gabby. So speaking of just in NVIDIA's increase in value, OpenAI, they're trying to raise money.
Oh, well, yeah, Sam Altman.
Yeah, so is this for OpenAI or what's he raising capital for?
To make chips.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so just for fun, share how much he's raising.
It's not $1 billion. It's not $100 billion. It's $7 trillion.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the number that they've said. And apparently it's like there's a lot of layers to that and what that money would go to and da da da. But yeah, that's what he's trying to raise right now. Seven trillion.
Where's he to get that from? Saudi Arabia?
It looks like Saudi Arabia. Yeah. So that's just like I don't even know how to comment on that. This is like next level. What? $7 trillion? Like, we have a hard time wrapping our minds around what a billion means.
Yeah.
A trillion?
Mm-hmm. You know, this leads me to something that I watched today. There's a scientist, for real, climate scientist. Mm-hmm. Her name's Judith Curry, C-U-R-R-Y. And she has a book, either it's out or coming out, called Climate Uncertainty and Risk, okay? And she had written a paper in 2007 that was sort of like, really she became like a darling for the global warming and all that. But what happened is during that presentation of that article, it made other climate scientists, do you see how I use that word? Mm-hmm. Okay, people who really actually study weather, not people who go to university to have talking points to talk about it on the news. They understand how these things, these multiple and very different systems work, mm-hmm. right? You're not just talking about the ocean or the wind or, you know, tree ring readings of temperature, like, okay, all of it. And they pushed her on it and said, you're wrong. You're totally wrong. And so she's like, I had to listen to it. I had to hear it. I had to see it. I had to see all the data. And then she kind of changed her mind. And so already by like 2009, she started becoming a they started calling her then a climate deniist. Mm. Then by 2017, rather than just kind of riding it out for a couple of years, she retired from teaching because it was just too intense, right? But she said something that felt really important, because when you talk to me about OpenAI trying to get $7 trillion to do chips and other things, here's something she said that I thought was really important. So for anyone genuinely interested in a full conversation around climate, I would definitely suggest checking her out. She's incredibly thoughtful. There's no emotion. You know, she's mature. She's a teaching professor, an adult. She said, we've taken these three issues and bundled them together. One being clean and cheap energy. So the thing that everyone is forgetting is the blockchain and AI and all these things are going to take a lot of power. A lot. Mm-hmm. And she's like, wind and solar, it is not going to cut it. And listen, I'm all for the best thing for the planet too. But basically the conversation about, you know, kneecapping all these fossil fuel companies is a real mistake. Like, we don't actually understand what we're getting ourselves into when we say, oh, just go to solar and wind. Not only is elements of this less efficient and more our footprint gets bigger, it gets very expensive. And she said, so that's one bucket, because there's almost three and a half billion people on this planet, mostly in Africa, that still don't have access to an electrical grid. Mm-hmm. So she's like, that's one thing we could solve right now. Mm-hmm. She said, then the second thing is that extreme climate events. Okay, so a hurricane, a flood, something like that. That's another component of weather. It happens. It won't always be the pattern, but it happens. And then the third and final thing is climate change. And she said, we've taken all of it and kind of mushed it together and said, hey, if you're for this power, you're against the planet. And the thing that was the most important for me when I heard this talk, and I'm just bringing it up because especially if you have a kid, she said, we also are doing our young people a disservice because they are freaked out. They think we're in doomsday. And she's like, you need to get out there and live your best life. Hmm. Right? Like the joy of living, the celebration of life, of creating, of participating. But what we're doing in some ways, because we're having a half-informed conversation about climate, is we're paralyzing groups of young people in generations where it's like, why bother? Hmm. And I just really appreciated this measured point of view. Mm. But also, as we're pushing technology forward and everybody's like, oh, technology, it's like, yeah. And guess what? Lots and lots of power.
Yeah.
It uses a lot of energy.
Yeah.
All this stuff.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if we could grow up a little bit and start to collectively solve things that we can soon, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, so part of this, you know,
AI is not going to solve power. Okay, I can't wait to hear this, Elijah.
Okay.
Are we going to wrestle right now?
No. I'm going to throw something out there. See what you think. Okay. I'm not making definitive statements because it's not out there yet. But this thing called Sora, the AI video generator. When people see these videos, there's this. Wow, it's a photorealistic video. Amazing. Wow. But what people don't take into consideration is it's very possible and very likely that what this thing is doing, and this goes back to the QSTAR leaked document, is that the machine to calculate these environments and being able to give you full range of wherever you want to move the camera and these videos they're creating is doing physics. So if this these machines are starting to do and understand physics, then it's soon going to very rapidly turn into something that can do physics way better and much more advanced than we'd ever be able to comprehend and come up with solutions to things like electricity and all these other issues that we could never have thought of.
Okay, fair. However,
yeah,
let's say this.
Yeah.
I would feel very comfortable in believing there are many scientists that are alive and accomplished and well-researched and have done their research that would say, let's say hypothetically, nuclear. Mm-hmm. It's clean, it's inexpensive, because this is the other part, right? Yep. Is the cost. But yet that doesn't go with sort of, it seems, what the powers that be would prefer.
Well, also we're so afraid of it, you know, because Chernobyl and Three Mile Island, there's all these past events that make us so afraid of nuclear.
But we're a long way down the road from that. Yeah. And if anybody spent 5 minutes to like read a couple things, we would probably know. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know it well enough, but I just saw the Oliver Stone documentary and it's like, it seems like there's a pretty compelling case to, we should really revisit this.
And hydrogen, if they could figure that out, that has some interesting.
When we say figure it out, it's like, what if the power of these things that are growing
I'm not discounting that it can. My point is if you still have a handful of people that are playing the board for control and money.
Yeah.
Even when the answers are there from this brilliant AI, are they going to utilize it? Because from my point of view, there's no way, and I appreciate Elon Musk, that there's going to be open AGI, or I don't believe, at least for a while, that these companies will be able to hold on to that. That they will hold on to it so that they can monetize and do everything they want to do.
So I think we talked about it a couple episodes ago, but Zuckerberg is. Made the announcement that he's open sourcing their AGI model.
No offense to Zuckerberg. Let's not even make it personal. Let's just talk about Facebook in general.
No, wait.
Have they done? What have their practices been?
Hold on. I'm only bringing that up as one tiny example. That there are companies out there that are talking about open sourcing AGI. And if one company does it, it's out there. So then all of a sudden, anybody that has access to these things can then make it. The guardrails are off. It doesn't have to be up to a government anymore to make it. If these new solutions can be made with a 3D printer or whatever the physics new model solution allows.
Yeah, but they're just going to turn our electricity off.
That's a whole...
You know what I'm saying?
Who knows? It's possible.
They'll be here's your $2,000 electrical bill or whatever.
Then you put in the thing. You're like, all right, how do I circumnavigate that and turn my electricity bill
on? I love your optimism.
I'm just saying I'm not saying this is the way it's going to go. There's a counterbalance to all of these other sides. Like, yes, it could go negative, but it could also go positive. Because if you have these things that are available to people, then and if it actually is doing physics and you give that to people that understand that and are able to make these things, and it's like, maybe that is the first $1 billion company started by one person. They're just like, oh yeah, cool. We figured out climate change. That's obviously, there's, like you said, there's three buckets to that. And that's a giant generalized statement. That's way too simplified, but that's something like that is possible. Don't know.
I hope that human nature changes then a little bit.
I think it's going to have to.
Yeah.
I think, especially when you remove the scarcity. Because if we're all fighting and, when people are like, you're having to steal things because there's such a drastic difference between the haves and the have-nots. And if we can start to make this the great equalizer, which I think it has the potential to be, not that it will, but it has the potential to be, then, that can change human nature. When you actually don't have people that are starving.
But then you always have a group that wants to somehow be, an overlord of somebody.
For sure.
You always have a couple psychopaths that are like, I want to be the king.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so wild. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I just want to remind people, Judith Curry, she, I really appreciate how much she's taken it on the chin.
Yeah.
And when you hear her talk, she's so incredibly measured. Mm-hmm. And obviously this is what she does.
Right. I haven't listened to it, but I'll check it out.
And really thoughtful.
Yeah. Cool.
Because it's not easy.
No. Yeah. Not easy to go against the grain in any aspect of life. Yeah. Especially right now.
No. Yeah. And she really did it great. Okay. Tyler Perry. What's going on there?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, this goes back to this thing, Sora, the video generator.
I don't like the name so much.
No.
Sora?
S-O-R-A. That's what they called it.
I know, but it's very close to Soros.
Oh.
And I'm just like, oh, I don't know. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess.
So once Sora was announced.
Now you can't say it without thinking about it.
Okay, well, I'm not. Listen, that's what they called it. You know, they might change the name based on this podcast. I have no idea.
Yeah, but sure.
If they're listening.
Who's behind it? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, you know, so Sora is this video generator that we've talked about and can create. You know, not just like little wonky, weird 4-second clips. You can create full minute long photorealistic clips just off a text prompt of videos. And so Tyler Perry has this incredible studio in Atlanta, and he was doing an $800 million expansion, I think, on the studio. And as soon as Sora came out, he pulled the plug on that expansion. So $800 million, he stopped. He's like, wait.
Wait, when he was doing expansion, what does that look like?
So he has this enormous studio in Atlanta.
Georgia, right?
Yeah, Atlanta. Yeah, it's in a, I haven't been there, but I've heard it's incredible.
Yeah,
it truly is like one of the best in the world. And they were doing this expansion.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's a very smart guy.
Yeah,
yeah. And so, but when he saw this announcement, he pulled the plug, and he was just like, he's like, I have to reassess. Like,
so he's going to get educated and think about if he does certain things, they'll be antiquated in 2 months, and you don't have to spend that kind of money on something and just get something.
Yeah, which is, I think, the absolute right way to be thinking about this. It's like, hold on, the landscape has changed. Mm-hmm. Let me reevaluate. Let's look at, okay, this was the way we were doing things. Things have just changed completely. Mm. Let's like reassess, let's just reevaluate, let's look at what this means.
Right.
Yeah.
But you said conversely, there was a Brian Grazer.
Yep.
So there's a kind of point, counterpoint, not counterpoint, but just an adjunct to that.
What I love was that Brian came out and he, you know, because he's so established in this world and, you know, everyone is so afraid and it's going to take our jobs and all this stuff. And he just basically said, AI will raise the bar for creative dreams. And it was like, that's awesome. And it's like, you know, he was talking about how people were so afraid, you know, when CGI came out and everything's going to be CGI. And it's like, yeah, there were some people using it maybe too much, but like, you know, it didn't, it just changed the thing. It's like, it was the next step. And I just love that he came out and said that. And it's because there is a lot of fear and a lot of uncertainty and a lot of panic around it, but it's also like, yeah, and you're going to give anybody the ability to make a movie. So that could, you know, there's going to be a lot of noise, like with music.
Sure.
And like, there's a lot of stuff you don't want to listen to because everybody can make music now. But there's going to be people that would never have the chance to tell stories that now will be able to.
Mm.
And that's really cool.
I think it's so interesting that when you're young or unestablished, that's when you're open and completely embracing of anything new. It's when you have something to lose or you've been successful, and I put that in air quotes, that all of a sudden you're like, oh, I don't know if this is good. And it's such a great reminder to, you know, almost pretend each day like you're looking at it with new eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, you can't fight the tide of what these things are.
Right.
And two, it's a much... it's a better place to come from when you're looking at everything with curiosity. It doesn't mean, and I'm saying this probably for myself, because a lot of this technology, and my reaction usually has to do with humanity. It doesn't have to do with my own personal, you know, job or profession.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel threatened there.
Yeah.
It's not that. It's for my reaction a lot, it's because of humanity.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
So, but it's just a great reminder to stay
open.
Yeah.
Because the world has just completely changed, and probably next week it's going to change again, and months again. And it's just, this is that time of just stay as nimble and open and curious as you possibly can. You know, there's something I heard someone talk about how when they invented TV, the first people doing stuff from television were used to coming from radio. So they were just came right off and were basically just like reading stories like they used to on radio and to television. And it really didn't work because they weren't creative enough to start thinking of dramas and sitcoms and all the things that because they just came from that old paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, this isn't a similar thing. Where it's like, break the old paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
Come at it with a completely open mind to just see what else is out there, instead of trying to be like, all right, well, how do I apply this to the way that I've been doing things? Yeah. It's just like I, and I don't know Tyler personally enough to say that he did this exactly intentionally, but it was like, yeah, let's just stop the way that we were doing it.
Yeah.
And let's see if there's a new way to do things.
Yeah. I feel like that rule would be pretty wise to follow every day.
I think so.
Even your relationships.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've been in the same relationship for a lot of years, but it's still the opportunity to wake up with new eyes and say, I'm not going to assume how this person is. I'm going to take them in. So I think that that idea actually is quite good for everything.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hard to do.
Oh, yeah. But stay present. I mean, that's the...
Yeah, I know. It's so funny. Why did we get these really important messages? Just breathe, stay present. And we did things to him to actually take away kind of the, we commercialized it in a way that it's in a way it's stolen the kind of the real quiet power that what that means, you know?
I think cliches are cliche for a reason.
I know.
It's like there was,
but sometimes like just breathe there, you know?
Yeah.
But be present. I want to knock people in the face. You
for
know?
Sure. But again, it depends who says it.
I know.
How they say it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, are you, because you feel it when someone says something. Does it resonate? Are you actually speaking? Like when Peter Evans says that to
oh,
me.
Oh my goodness.
That's a very different thing than when someone says, be present. And it's just like, oh, come on. But when he says it or somebody that actually Katie says it, they live it. They're like, oh yeah. Like,
that's right. So talking about technology, something interesting, I really appreciated that Italy banned all artificial meats. Did you see that?
Artificial meats? No.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, you're not allowed, like no fakey meats. They did this about, let's say, maybe right either in the new year, right at the beginning of the new year or at the end of 23, they made this whole thing that they will not be doing any fake meats.
Okay.
Okay. Now you're saying that Italy has banned
ChatGPT.
Yeah.
I think it was just for coding. I'm not exactly sure of how the extent of the ban. Okay. But yeah, basically productivity and coding dropped by 50% as soon as they banned it.
But how are they going to police that?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that there's, you know, ways to track what companies are doing what. And I don't think it's for private individuals. I have to look more into it. Like, but I think it's for large corporations using these, you know, programs. But yeah, the efficiency dropped by 50%. That was what it said.
What's that one that's the, is it Copilot? What's the one you told me about?
Which one?
For like your assistant?
Microsoft Copilot.
Yeah. How does that work?
You know,
do we know?
I've not really used it because I'm more on Apple stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't really dove into the Microsoft version. But to my understanding, it's not perfect yet. But, you know, there's like Google Workspace has a thing where you can connect it to your Gmail and it will help you. Like, it'll just draft emails based on all the previous thread. Like, it'll address the person, you know, to like take
in your language.
In your language and all the things that they've mentioned.
Do you use that?
I've used that. That's very helpful.
You use that?
Oh, yeah. Well, especially for like... I don't know. One of the examples they gave was like if you're canceling a flight and trying to get a refund for a flight, and it'll like take all, you just say, hey, get me a refund for this flight. And it'll go through and read the entire thread with the airline and it'll go like, you know, on this date, this happened and this was the reason and just all the shit that you wouldn't want to have to like copy and paste and find the thing and, you know, routing numbers, confirmation numbers, all the stuff. And it just spits it out in this like well-worded email. And it's like, you know. That is one example, or just, you know, you could say there's a project that's happening and this person isn't getting back to you, and or they've said, you know, we're curious about these points, and you could just say, tell them that, you know, we're going to work it out and I'd like to set up a call or whatever. And so it will go through your calendar, everything synced up, and say like, so based on what you said, and address every point that they've written, because it just takes you give it the context of how you want to reply. And then it uses all the information that is in the thread to then create a really well drafted.
So then just eyeball it and send it.
Yeah. Maybe make a little tweak or whatever. Yeah.
Okay. So Italy, they're on fire over there. They're...
We'll see. I mean, that's a whole other conversation about like what is artificial, you know, because if they're banning artificial meats and like then it's banning artificial intelligence, like what is, I don't know, that's a whole other conversation. What is the definition of artificial?
Okay. Oh my gosh. We're in the Matrix for sure.
Oh, for okay. Sure?
So yesterday we celebrated Laird's birthday.
Yeah.
And It's funny. I think he doesn't seem to. Of course, he's aware of time because he's always frustrated that he's not having more fun because he thinks time is going by. You know, I told you he always says, like, is this what we're doing?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it appears so.
Yeah.
Because he thinks every moment should be like full throttle adventure. So the ocean did not cooperate. There were no waves anywhere to be found. So Laird decided in that exact moment, fine, I guess I'm going to go on a 60-mile bike ride for his 60th birthday. And he looked at the weather and he goes, and it's going to be raining. And he's doing a street bike, a road bike, so it's a very thin tire. So I called my friend Jason Wynn, who is a very good bike rider and also a really great person. So I knew he wouldn't get on Laird's nerves. And I called him and said, hey, would you just show up at my house? Because I didn't want Laird to ride alone. And then Luca asked. And before you know it, you know the joke that Laird was sitting on the couch the night before going, great, so my ride has turned into our ride and, like, you know, all this like stuff. So needless to say, they go on their 60.8 mile in the rain bike ride, only one flat tire.
Yeah.
And then we presented Laird with a video with over 100 people expressing their feelings about Laird.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, you know, and Laird's like, I think I should watch this. You know, this is stuff that you should play when you're dead, right? And I'm like, no, this is, you should enjoy it now.
Yeah.
But I could feel you watched it with us.
Yeah.
And again, you're younger and you know, you haven't lived certain parts of your life out yet. And certainly we haven't, but we've lived certain parts out, right? The girls are older and what have you. I could feel that you were taking that in.
For sure. Oh my God, yeah.
What about it? Because for me, I was like, what's the lesson in this with Laird? With this, what does this mean? Like, I thought, I don't know. That's how I was looking at it.
From my perspective?
Yeah.
There was so much to it because, first of all, the consistency of what people were saying. People from all over the world, all ages, all walks of life, just being like, you're an inspiration. Like, your friendship, the way you show up for me, just over and over and over. Like, you're showing us how it's done. Just, it was like, oh my God, like, what a life well lived. And then I told you, like, the part that just blew me, I mean, beyond, is when you and Viola at the end just had certain messages, and I don't know how much you want to go into, but it was just like, oh, it floored me. Like, it just was like, this is the best.
But there's something that's interesting about this, which is, well, one, Mark Healy was very funny, and I don't care what anyone says, I think you're a nice guy.
Yeah, you're a good guy or something. Yeah.
So from our point of view, we see somebody who's beloved. I'm only bringing this up because I also know the other side of it.
Yeah.
And but somebody who often feels alone themselves on their mission, mm-hmm. on their quest,
mm-hmm.
because in their world, they feel like they're one of the only people that feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then also to do it, you oftentimes have to be alone.
Yeah.
And so it made me think sometimes to build these relationships or these lives, or to stand for anything or to go for something, you have to be willing to take the heat on it.
Yeah.
And certainly Laird is. But I thought, oh, the byproduct, we're seeing the byproduct, which is all this love and all this stuff. But there's equally another byproduct. And that is how life is. It goes back to what we're saying about Elon, obviously at a very different level, where, hey, if you want to do something for you for real and you want to have real connections with people, on the other side of that is there's going to be a lot of people who don't understand and they're not going to get you and they're not going to get your intention. And I really think if you can accomplish that, because I was raised, especially as a female or not raised, let's just say the narrative for a lot of females is success would be like, most people kind of like you, or, you know, you're a nice girl, but you realize it's hard to get anything done from that space. And it doesn't mean you have to be an asshole or unethical. I believe in telling the truth and all those things, But just that reminder. But man, when the people who love you get it.
Yeah.
I think it's okay.
For sure. There's a Leonard Cohen line that I was thinking about watching it, where he's like, if you don't become the ocean, you'll be seasick every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just a great example. I mean, you're, you know, in the middle of and starting out on so many different endeavors. And I also think for people listening, it's like, how do you just really trust yourself and have those few people that tell you the truth?
Yeah.
Even if it's like, hey, great job, or you might want to take a look at this. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, because when we talk about being present and all these things, I think with that too.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the end, who cares? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're only here for 80 years or whatever. Who the fuck cares? Like, you do it, you don't do it. You're hugely successful. You pile it into the ground. Right. Who cares?
Right.
And I think, obviously, that's where someone like Katie comes in.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we can put all this struggle and stress around it, but whether it goes the way we want or not, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that time... When I think, okay, in 20 years from right now, I'm going to be 74. You think I care? Like, I'm starting to be like, who cares? Because TikTok, man.
Yeah.
So if you can do that in your 30s or your 20s.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, yes. And like we said, how difficult that can be to do. But
well, it's also lonely.
Yeah.
Don't kid yourself.
Yeah.
It's lonely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything else in the technology realm this week that today in this last 5 minutes that you wanted to bring up that I failed to do so?
I mean, I don't think we can. There's always new little things, but I think, you know, and we talked about this, we can start asking, you know, everyone who's listening, like what it would be beneficial, you know, mm-hmm. for us to dive deeper into or double click on or whatever. But I don't know. Everything you just said is just so infinitely greater and more powerful than all of these things, because all these tools and all this stuff we're talking about developing, it's like, it's all to me in service of what you just said.
Yeah. And that's why we have these conversations, because we both have similar and different perspectives that represent probably the way a lot of people feel. Mm-hmm. So let's hash it out and look at it and say, hey, how can we use this for positive, because it isn't going anywhere, and how are we also in pursuit and growing for our own personal missions as human beings, whether, you know, and I think people often think, oh, well, I have this job or this career and this is what I'm doing. Well, you could be doing things forever.
Yeah. What are you spending your time doing?
Yeah.
Who are you doing it with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could be 65 and be like, I'm going to also now do something different and new.
Totally.
So I think that that's forever.
Yeah. And you know, what you talked about, you know, being remembered, you know, it's so interesting. I just remember my mom saying how that, like, she didn't have this fear of death towards the end. And she was like, but I do have this thing that keeps coming up about realizing that, you know, once everybody that knew me mm-hmm. dies, I'm not going to be remembered, and how that really was messing with her. And it was just so interesting. She's like, and it just feels, she's like, it feels so primal. It's like baked in that I don't, mm-hmm. like, I'm not afraid of dying. Like, you know, her whole story, it's like she chose to die. Yeah. So it wasn't that, but that kept coming up, this fear of, you know, not being remembered, was so interesting.
Mm.
And I don't know what that means exactly or where to place it. But I just, you kind of brought it up, and it's like, you know, you're going to be forgotten about eventually. And I even heard someone say recently, they're like, yeah, I want to be forgotten, because the majority of people that are remembered throughout history were not remembered. The majority of people were not remembered for positive things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the big people we think is like Genghis Khan or Hitler. So it's like,
well, and also, by the way, even people who were great, believe me, if we asked the people closest, like their families, their families would say they were never around.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it, again, these figures, that's what they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's why, especially your message and Viola's messages were so impactful to me, to see that. Because it's like, you can have all the other things on the highest levels, and if you don't have that, and if, you know, whatever, but if you do have that, like, success, mission.
Well, you don't usually fool your partner or your children.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if he's fooled me, he's done a really good job.
I don't know if I ever told you, but that's how my dad met Katie, because he met Steven first. And Steven said, oh yeah, my wife is the most enlightened person I've ever met. And my dad was like, wait, what? Like, for a husband to say that about his wife? He's like, I got to meet your wife. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so you're talking about Byron Katie. Yeah. And her husband is Stephen Mitchell, who's, you know, highly intellectual and celebrated author, writer.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think until next time, we've covered it. I can't wait to see. How long is this Elon lawsuit going to go on for, like a year?
We don't know. We're going to find out.
The lawyers just must be like, this is so fun.
Something. I mean, this just happened. Like, this was 2 days ago. Yeah. So it's going to be very interesting to see what comes of all of this. And it's very possible that everything we just talked about is all interconnected in some way.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Isn't it always?
Yeah. So we'll see. But, you know, there's that Chinese proverb, like, maybe we live in interesting times. Mm-hmm. It's like, we're here.
Yeah.
We're in interesting times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any movies?
Oh, good movies. I watched the one you recommended, Champions.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Sweet.
It was super sweet.
Yeah. Did you ever watch She Comes For Me?
I started it. I haven't finished it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about you? I haven't seen any movie. I'm trying to think. I love movies so much, too. Yeah. I haven't seen any. I want to go to a movie theater.
Yeah. I haven't been to a movie theater in a while.
Yet. I know, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we got to do that soon.
Yeah.
What we'll do is we'll also do a video and invite people to help us direct the conversation towards what they want.
What everyone wants to hear more about, or what we're glazing over, or like
not. You want to go deep?
Or like,
I'll just set you up by yourself and you can
go deep. No.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. All right, Elijah Allen Blitz, thank you. And I was calm today. Normally, I'm more aggressive about these topics.
Well, I don't think anything, there was like not much to rile you up on. What did we?
Fire me up at all.
Wait, we got into the one thing of, oh yeah, about how do you the new physics and like, oh yeah, we're going to potentially solve climate change. Oh, the computers is going to do it. Yeah. Who knows?
I did microdose today, so.
Right on.
That was amazing.
That's great. That's the way to go.
Yeah, if you're listening to this and you ever thought about it, I am what one would call straight. I would say I'm a pretty straight person.
Straight edge.
I mean, you guys always laugh, like, I'm like, what does that do? And this, and you know, people, I can't even recognize if someone's high or barely or not. I grew up in the Caribbean. I drank a little as a teenager. My adult life, I don't drink, you know, after, let's say, the age of 21. The only drug I tried is weed. And I started using edibles a few years back for sleep. My brain started feeling like it was setting up. It was hard. Hmm. And my friend from Hawaii initiated me into microdosing. And literally you could go to do a deposition or drive a kid to school if you had to after microdosing. So be really clear, you're not tripping at all. I still to this day have never done a psychedelic.
Right.
That's probably part of my problem. But
a full trip, yeah.
No, yeah. I haven't tripped out.
Yeah.
But I will say the buoyancy it gives to my system and the level of homeostasis. Again, it's measured out. I'm not guessing. I take anywhere from like 125 to 250
micrograms.
Yeah. And it's pretty incredible. I will tell you one really quick story. Did I tell you this? Mm. I'll just give people an example. When I do, I still read my ads. When I read my ads, I do them all in one take when I microdose. Mm-hmm. And I had a thing where I had to review some videos the other day. And I had said something many times about a certain shot I did not want in these videos ever or in the future. And lo and behold, the shot shows up. And, you know, I already am irritated that I'm having to approve videos.
Yeah.
But whatever. That's just what I've asked for. Yeah. And when we were going through it, I said to this person after I said, hey, can you take the shot out and whatever? And I said, I feel like I've said this before. It was so wonderful. So if you're like a boss and you want a line, I wasn't bitchy.
Yeah.
I wasn't even mad.
Yeah.
But I had microdosed and it was just super clear, very direct, which is how I want to be, totally. But I still want to be loving.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just feel like I've said this before.
Yeah.
And that person was like, yes, you have. And I was like, okay. And so, man, if I could just show up and respond like that.
the subtlety and clarity of that line, because it's not, I've said this before, or like, didn't I say this before? It's like, yeah. I feel like I've said this before.
And so there, you can borrow that.
It's great.
It was given to me. And what do they say? The head of the mushroom is for your brain and the stem is for your body. Did you hear that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give it to Lurk.
We can ask Paul Stamets, yeah.
I know. Yeah. Gosh, Paul Stamets.
Yeah.
What a G.
Such a G.
All right. So just sharing that. If you have anyone, but ask someone in your life. I think it's worth learning about.
Microdose.
Yeah.
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 And, for sure.
And Michael Pollan.
Yep.
Michael Pollan helped me.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, because he went from like, oh, he's the agriculture guy to like, listen, you guys should all be paying attention to this.
So that's it. And I'm just saying, sharing that because I have had such a positive relationship with it. And I do it maybe once a month, or sometimes I could do it twice a week. Mm. I'm not doing it in any specific way.
Yeah.
But talk about tools.
Yeah.
I think it's a beautiful tool.
Absolutely.
Food is medicine.
That's the truth.
All right, Elijah. Thank you.
Thank you, Gabby.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you want to learn more, there is a ton of valuable information on my website. All you have to do is go to GabrielleReese.com or head to the episode show notes to find a full breakdown with helpful links to studies, research, books, podcasts, and so much more. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out and send them to @GabbyReese on Instagram. And if you feel inspired, please subscribe. I'll see you next week.